Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And you're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. This is number 854. That's right, it's more than 16 years of doing this, and we have a special guest for you now. He is a food trend expert from the Summer Fancy Food Show in New York City, but much more important than that, he's a professor of culinary arts and food science at Drexel University in Philadelphia. Before moving to Drexel, Dr. Deutsch built the culinary arts program at the Community College City University of New York, that famous place in New York, and the PhD concentration in food studies at the CUNY CUNY Graduate Center in New York City, and is really a superb, if you will, artist in the food science area, meaning he understands this area more than any other. Dr. Deutsch, when I was speaking to one of the CEOs of one of the largest food companies, one of the three largest food companies, and I speak to him every year trying to get him to make healthy food in their mass production market, I spotted when I did this in 2001, I started in 1993 once a year, but when I did it in 2001 and 2002, he said, "Mike, that's just a fad. We're not going to do it." But this year, I spotted healthy food in their test kitchen, and he said, "Mike, it's now a trend. Healthy food will come into existence and be popular in America." What's your take on that, Dr. Deutsch? Was he just humoring me, or do you think that's really true, that we could have healthy food as a trend?
No, I think it's very much a trend. And we talk to a lot of companies who are really struggling to find markets for their traditional products. I think originally we didn't see a lot of health food stores were their own sort of weird hippie kind of category. And then we saw a few decades of people saying they wanted healthy choices, with some research saying they didn't actually want that. You know, so for example, if you asked a restaurant guest why they chose a restaurant, they might say, "Oh, I love it. I love that they have healthy options." And then you say, "Oh, well, what did you eat?" And they said, "Well, I had the chicken Alfredo pasta," and you know, they just want to know it's there. But I do think we're at a time where better for you is a major and growing category in the food industry. And I think the food industry, it has taken a lot of hits from public health critics and medical professionals. I think rightly in many cases for not providing healthier food. And part of their resistance to doing that, frankly, is that it's all well and good to tell someone to eat healthier, but until they're actually going to vote with their wallets and manufacturers know that there's a market there, they're not going to make those changes. And now we're seeing that people are really, really voting with their wallets, and making healthier choices in the supermarket and at restaurants. And a manufacturer these days really has no choice but to pay attention to that.
Yeah, I think that was the point he would make to me, is that as he is, I think, is the largest of the, at least privately owned, mass food producers in America, and the largest, in fact, to Walmart, supplier to Walmart. And he would say, "I can only do what people will eat." And what he said is, we're seeing this as a trend, so that there will be at least a solid segment of healthy foods, healthy choices, in mass markets now. On the other hand, I'm in Cleveland at the Cleveland Clinic, and when you go down to our queue where the Cavaliers play basketball, Bar Simon is a, I think, has every restaurant there, one version or another, and everything is wrapped in bacon in one way or another. And so I consider him the leading supplier to the Cleveland Clinic's heart program. But in any case, it seems like we're diverging into both healthy and divergent food.
Healthy, yeah, and I think that's food. Always the challenge, you know, in food marketing. You know, if you are shopping for a car, it's pretty easy to segment you into what type of consumer you are. Do you know, do you want something with performance, safety, family friendly? And you're going to make one purchase that is going to take you through a few years. You know, one of the challenges and one of the rich things about food and food studies is you can start your day with, you know, organic granola and a banana and black coffee and feel very, very healthy and feel good about your choices and have one sort of psychographic as a consumer. And then you may decide to go out for happy hour after work and end up, you know, putting away 2,000 calories in wings and burgers and cocktails. And it's the same consumer in the same day. And we see that all the time. You know, one thing I would suggest is that as much as the Cavaliers would like it to be otherwise, you know, going to a basketball game is an occasional experience and a special occasion. And certainly, you know, food does a lot more than provide nutrition. Otherwise, there would be no restaurants and we would just, you know, drink our Soylent or hook up to our feed tube. So, you know, while I certainly, and I'm sure neither of us would advocate for a bacon-wrapped something at every meal, I think there's, you know, there's certainly nothing wrong with enjoying a special occasion experience and having some indulgent food. You know, it's not the one exception to the rule that's gonna put you in the hospital bed.
Right. As long as the special occasions are not 350 of the 365 days,
right,
I would
right,
say.
Right, exactly.
Right. So I do believe in 4 special occasions a year and do it myself. But in any case, and the problem I have is as a Cavaliers fan and as a Browns fan, as a Indians fan, you can see I'm crazy on sports. I will go this year. I went to probably 48 of the 50 or so Cavalier games.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not, if I did it every time, it would be no, you know, it's not a special occasion anymore.
Well, I'm based in Philadelphia, so, you know, it's a little bit easier to say there's not too much to see, especially in basketball these days.
Or maybe even in baseball.
In baseball, so, for sure.
So tell me, what are the food trends that you are seeing? What are the, in other words, the one thing I must admit I've seen more of in the last probably 4 months than I've ever seen before is avocado toast.
Yep.
So tell us what the hot food items are, and first of all, how big is this food show?
The food show is huge. It takes more than a day to do properly. It's close to 200, I think 180,000 food products are there, many of them new. Some of them are not yet on the market. Some of them are new to market. And it unites sellers and buyers from all over the world. There are pavilions from different countries. So it's a really good opportunity not only as someone who works with the food industry, but also who studies the food industry, to really see what's coming out. Certainly your avocado toast example is a great one. One theme we're seeing a lot of is good fats and paying more attention. You know, a lot of people used to think predominantly in terms of macronutrients. You know, this has what percentage of fat and what percentage of carbohydrates. Consumers are being a little bit more nuanced about that. For example, differentiating between carbohydrates like fiber and whole grains from added sugars, or looking more at the types of fat that are actually in the food. We're seeing a lot of better for you, especially in categories that haven't traditionally been healthy categories. So better for you snacks, better for you treats. We're seeing a lot of function. So plant-based protein, protein everything has been a big function of interest. So, you know, if you're going to have chips in the afternoon as a little pick-me-up, it shouldn't just be for the sensory fulfillment that that crunch and salt provides. You know, is there a way to have a bean chip that also delivers some protein? So if you're going to take calories you want them to work for you.
So they're basically putting function in the food, or even natural food, but have it be a little bit towards a function you want.
Right, exactly. So, for example, dried roasted beans, like chickpeas, are something that was popular this year as a snack to take a little bit of the market share away from, you know, traditional salty snacks like potato chips. You know, potato chips provide calories and provide fat and provide salt and are delicious. But is there a way to get the salt and crunch and sensory properties while delivering something else you need, like fiber or protein?
Gotcha. So that's clearly a relatively new trend, as I understand what you said.
Yeah, we're seeing more and more of it, and the big food companies are really paying attention because they are interested in providing healthier options, but in some cases they don't know the best way to approach that. So you're seeing a lot of mergers and acquisitions where smaller innovative food companies are being bought by these multinationals.
And tell me about breakfast. What's changed in breakfast other than the avocado toast I've been seeing every place? There must be other things that are changing.
Yeah, breakfast is definitely an area where people are health-focused. Breakfast is really interesting because it's also an area where routine is seen as virtuous. So if I told you I start every day with a banana and a bowl of cereal and some yogurt, you would say, oh, that's good. You know, if I told you every night for dinner I have a salmon fillet and some sautéed zucchini and some brown rice, you would say, what a weirdo. This guy is regimented and bizarre, right? So it's an opportunity. Breakfast is really interesting for food companies because it's so routinized that it's an opportunity to get in front of a consumer every day. And so that's why one of the reasons there's a lot of excitement there. You know, the stomach only holds so much food over the course of the day. So while we can add, you know, we only have 2 feet, but we might have 30 or 50 pairs of shoes in our closet, you know, you can't quite do the same thing with calories. So the number of opportunities to get in front of consumers is really a lot higher in breakfast food.
And have breakfast foods for kids changed at all? Because I know they were very high. I mean, you'd go to the market when I would go to the market with kids, and there would be a lot of added sugar.
Yeah.
Has that changed at all?
It's changing. I think there's still a lot that needs to be done there. There's been some regulation around marketing foods directly to children, and I think the more of that we have, the healthier things will be. You know, children are still a really tough demographic to market to because you have to appeal, you know, children, pets, a number of these categories. You have to make something that kids like, but you also have to make something that parents feel good about. We are seeing more reduced sugar alternatives for breakfast. We're also seeing more creativity, I think, around savory items for breakfast. So it's not all, you know, for a while, fat was bad and carbs were good. So you saw a lot of non-fat cereals and things like that. Here we're seeing more, you know, protein-based cereals. We're seeing eggs sort of making a comeback and other savory breakfast items. And we're not seeing as much on the overly sugary sweet cereals, breakfast pastries, things like that. Has especially for kids, we've seen a lot less movement.
Now, what do you have on your website? The website is drexel.edu/ food lab.
Yep, and that's my research lab. So I'm a professor of culinary arts and food science at Drexel. And the work in our lab is really focused on applying culinary and food science innovation skills, product development skills to good food causes. So the same skills that are used to make some of these big bad food industry foods that we like to poke holes in as being unhealthy, we're applying those to products to make them sustainable, health promoting, and also inclusive, thinking about allergens and so on. You can find out more about our programs there, drexel.edu/foodlab. And we also have undergraduate and graduate programs in culinary arts and science, food science, and hospitality management.
And is there a continuing education? In other words, those are directed at people who are going into the field or want to go into the field. And I should make sure people know it's drexel.edu. / food lab. Continuing education for us old guys who want to learn more and want to maybe get into the field or get more knowledge about the field? Is there a way of taking one course or two courses a semester or even taking courses online?
It's not been our focus. Most of our focus has been on full degree programs, but we do have students from all ages, and we do have non-matriculated students who come in here and there and take a course with us either in person or online.
Now, I'm going to visit Philadelphia this weekend.
Excellent.
It is fun. I have a granddaughter who's 18 months, so my wife and I come in every now and then to get to visit.
Right.
And they're at the University of Pennsylvania at CHOP. He teaches at CHOP, which is Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania, and their Department of Pediatric Endocrinology. But Drexel is right near there. Is that correct?
Yep. We're right next door to Penn.
And is your lab in one of those buildings in that area, or is it located a distance from there?
No, it's in that area. And actually, we collaborate quite a bit with Children's Hospital of Philadelphia around therapeutic food product development, looking at opportunities to, rather than giving kids drugs or prescriptions, looking at where we might be able to develop a food product or make a menu change to have some positive health outcomes.
So for kids who want stronger bones or for kids who are diabetic, I can have my son call Drexel or log on to drexel.edu /foodlab and find out more about how to do that and more about your lab, Jonathan
absolutely.
Dr. Deutsch, who is a professor of culinary arts and food science at Drexel University. So that's where he would – that's probably one of the best places in the nation for him to do that, and it's right near where he lives.
Yep, absolutely. We're working primarily with the integrative health folks at CHOP with their dietitians and doctors, but we're happy to work across the hospital.
Fantastic. Any last words, Dr. Deutsch, on what I should – and by the way, it's D-E-U-T-S-C-H.
Correct.
He's a professor of culinary arts and food science at Drexel University, drexel.edu / food lab. Anything I should, any parting words on this podcast, which is number 854B?
No, thank you so much for having me. It was delightful, and I look forward to future conversation.
I look forward to it because I'm going to continue to learn a lot from you. You've been listening to Podcast 854B on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast, where you learn the latest in medical research and how to apply it to your situation. We'll learn more from Dr. Deutsch in the future. In the meantime, thanks for listening. We'll be back with a new You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show next Tuesday. Hope you stay tuned. And Ben, thanks as usual for great engineering.